are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. You're with Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. You can find them all on my Twitter account at Patricia_Traina. And I am joined today by my former co-host and still very good friend, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. And we have a Victory Monday to talk about. A Victory Monday, Ed, that I don't know that many people saw possible.
It certainly was an ugly game. Interesting, kind of fun to watch. Ugly, but a victory, and the Giants are not going to give it back.
Nor should they. You know, it was an overtime victory. It went, what did it go about? I'm trying to remember. I know at least halfway through the overtime period. Overtime period now reduced to 10 minutes, but the Giants came out with a 30-27 win. And Ed, let's start with the offense because, you know, I think it was pretty much a tale of two halves for the Giants offense.
It sure was, Patty. You know, the interesting thing was we're sitting there in the press box yesterday and you're watching the first half and, you know, the Giants activated rookie quarterback Kyle Lauletta for the first time yesterday. And you're sitting there watching the game thinking, if this continues, would the Giants actually put Kyle Lauletta in the game at some point in the second half? And you know, it didn't continue, obviously, but it was awful in the first half. And most of it was just Eli just not looking comfortable, forcing some throws, you know, being off in the first half. And it was bad. And I think I turned to you at one point in the game, and I said to somebody anyway, I said, I think Chase Daniel is the Giants' best player here in the first half.
Yes, indeed. And just to back up with some stats here, Eli Manning in the first half finished 7 of 17 for 73 yards, took 2 sacks, threw a very ugly interception. I'm surprised he didn't throw more because the way he was throwing behind receivers and just, you know, being so reckless. Anyway, he finished with a 29.8 quarterback rating, which is just not Eli-like.
No, it wasn't, but you know, it was a bad first half, really was, but to the Giants' credit, you know, they were able to overcome that and play much better, you know, in the second half. So, I mean, you know, you can't give up, you know, on a guy after, you know, after one half of football. So, like I said, to their credit, you know, they came out in the second half and got some things done.
Yeah, and the way they were able to do that, Ed, and I'm going to give you another statistic, is at the half, Saquon Barkley had just 7 carries for 43 yards. And let me see, he had 2 pass targets, caught one of them for 1 yard. By the time the game had ended, Saquon Barkley, 24 touches, 125 yards. Wayne Gallman got 5 carries, 16 yards. And in the passing game, he had 4 pass targets, caught 3 for 21 yards. And let's see, Gallman had 1 pass target for 2 yards. So they started, 1 pass target for minus 2 yards. So they started to really, you know, get the running backs involved, which they really didn't do in the first half that as much.
No, they didn't, you know, for some reason. I mean, I thought in the first half they sort of, I don't remember exactly how many times they targeted Odell. I think it was 6 or 7 in the first half, but it felt like they were forcing the ball to Odell Beckham and not spreading it around, not using the running game the way that they can and should. And I think Pat Shurmur even said after the game that in the second half, they got back to the way that they feel like they really need to play.
Right, and just to answer your question about the stats, Odell had 8 pass targets in the first half, caught 2 of those for 34 yards. Otherwise, there were a total of 17 pass targets. Again, 8 of those went to Odell. The nearest receiver to him at the half was Rhett Ellison, who had 3 pass targets and caught 2 for 18 yards. So, you know, basically, I think you're right. It just seemed like they were trying to force feed the ball to Odell. And then if you look at the final stats, you see there's a little bit more of a distribution. You know, just going down the line, for example, Ellison and Sterling Shepard finished as the leading receivers as far as reception goes. They each had 4. Beckham, Barkley had 3. Russell Shepard and Scott Simonson, the tight end, had 2. And then Benny Fowler and Wayne Gallman each had 1. So they did a little bit better job of distributing the ball around as opposed to honing in on the one receiver, which, you know, I think the Bears picked up, you know, fairly easy. They had Kyle Fuller on Odell Beckham Jr., I think, for most of the game, certainly most of the first half. And Fuller, he's a pretty good cornerback. I mean, he just wasn't letting them do what they wanted to do. And I was just kind of surprised at the lack of the balance. I mean, usually we see the Giants start off with the running game and then they back away from it. And this time it just seemed like they weren't even giving it much of a chance to get started.
No, and I think this is part of what we see sometimes when the Giants' offense doesn't function well, Patty. I think we see a little bit of an over-reliance sometimes on getting the ball out to Odell, as much of a wonderful player as he is. You know, sometimes when you force feed one player or you know, just focus on one guy to the detriment of the rest of your offense, that's not a good way to go. And I just think, you know, I think we've seen it over the years when things aren't going well for the Giants, the ball tends to go to Odell or go in his direction, you know, maybe sometimes even when it shouldn't.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, Ed, one final thing we need to talk about from the offensive perspective is we've got to discuss the job that the offensive line did against the big, bad Bears defense. Now, I'm looking at the final stats here. The Bears finished with just 3 sacks, 1 by Akeem Hicks, 1 by Khalil Mack, and 1 by Leonard Floyd. They had 7 tackles for a loss, 6 quarterback hits, the 1 interception, 8 pass breakups. Not bad, considering I think a lot of people thought that Bears defense was going to basically take over the game.
No, not bad at all, Patty. There were a couple of stretches. I think if I remember correctly, there were 2 straight plays at one point where Eli got sacked. And then, of course, there was the really unfortunate play call toward the end of the game with the Giants at the Chicago 30, you know, in position for a field goal to go up 2 scores where Eli ended up getting sacked and the Giants ended up punting. But all in all, you know, the Giants put up 30 points against a really good defense. Obviously, you know, one of those touchdowns was a defensive score. But when you're able to do what the Giants did offensively against a good defense like that, you have to feel good about it. And the offensive line should feel good about its work yesterday.
Absolutely. Ed, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, let's look at the Giants defense and the day that they had. So stay with us, folks.
The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, follow Locked On NFL Net to get all the latest breaking news and game highlights from the Locked On Podcast Network NFL hosts, all on one convenient feed. On Instagram, Locked On NFL Net gives you the biggest stories, including audio cuts as provided by the various Locked On NFL team hosts. Make sure you follow Locked On NFL Net on both Twitter and Instagram to get your daily fill of the NFL.
Welcome back, Giant fans. You're Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina, and my special guest today is my former co-host, Ed Valentine. We're still friends. He still keeps supporting me coming back. I try to do the same thing for him. Always great to have you on, Eddie.
Always great to be here, Patty.
All right. Before we jump into the second segment in which we break down the Giants' defensive performance in their 30-27 overtime win against the Chicago Bears, just a quick reminder to everybody that tomorrow is Twitter Tuesday. You guys know the drill. Send those questions in. Tag them AskPTrain, P-T-R-A-I-N. You can post them on my Twitter account at Patricia_Traina. You can email them to me at LockedOnGiantsPodcast@gmail.com. Just make sure you get those questions in ASAP because I usually try and record the Tuesday show early in the evening on Monday night so that I can get it out to you guys just shortly after midnight. For those of you on the West Coast, those of you who are starting your day while we're starting our evening here. So all questions appreciated. And thank you guys. You guys have been doing a tremendous job with the questions. I mean, awesome. All right, Ed, let's get back to business here. Let's talk about the Giants defense. And, you know, it's interesting. We have been asking James Betcher for, I think, at least 2 weeks. I know definitely we asked him last week. When are the sacks going to come? When are the sacks going to come? Well, yesterday, Ed, they had a five-sack day. Let's see. It broke down to B.J. Hill had three. Olivier Vernon had the other two. I mean, finally, they finally were able to turn some of those pressures into sacks.
Yes, they were, Patty. You know, let's also be a little bit realistic about that pass rush. Two of those sacks came courtesy of Chase Daniel, you know, mishandling snaps or mishandling handoffs, you know, and recovering his own fumbles and the Giants basically just touching him down. But, you know, that said, B.J. Hill had two legitimate sacks. Olivier Vernon had one. There was some pressure, you know, from the Giants, you know, from the Giants front. And it was good to see. It was also good to see, you know, again, the Giants creating turnovers. I mean, two interceptions by Alec Ogletree, fumble recovery by Sean Chandler, I believe it was. You know, I watched Alec Ogletree and make those two interceptions, and I thought, you know, maybe he should be playing tight end.
You know, it's funny. I was just going to go there. You know, Alec Ogletree spoke to the media in the days before the game, and he stood there and he said, look, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here. He said, look, I'm not happy with my play this year. I can be better, you know, and I think he's heard the criticism that he can't cover, he can't do this. And you know what? He went out there as fired up as I have ever seen him as a member of the Giant. And he had himself a day. And it's interesting because, you know, little fun fact, Alec Ogletree and his brother-in-law, his former Giant safety, Andrew Adams, who is now a member of the Tampa Bay Bucks, combined for, I believe it was, five interceptions yesterday. And just a tremendous day for those two brother-in-laws.
You know, it's also interesting, Patty. I got a kick out of one of Ogletree's post-game comments. You know, he said he has four interceptions now on the season. And I believe, you know, again, I'm going to paraphrase. He told, you know, Coach Pat Shurmur that if he gets to five, he wants at least one play on offense.
Yeah, that goes back to what you were saying about, you know, he should play tight end. I mean, goodness, if you're going to catch those balls, why not? Hey, the Bears put Akeem Hicks on offense, so, you know, maybe Ogletree will get his wish.
There you go. That was an interesting play. I mean, good Lord, you know, give the ball to a 332-pound defensive tackle on a fourth and goal. A little ode to William Refrigerator Perry there. I just know I wouldn't have wanted to try to make that tackle.
Yeah, seriously. And let's talk about some of these younger players, you know, who just had themselves really, really fine games. And I mentioned B.J. Hill. And, you know, the reason why I bring this up is because on a Twitter Tuesday, I had a question from a reader, or I should say a listener. And I don't remember who it was, and I apologize to that individual, but they were like, give us a reason to continue watching the Giants the rest of this season. And I said at the time, they've got a lot of intriguing young talent. And on the defensive side of the ball, I think we saw that yesterday. Just going down the stats here. Let's see. B.J. Hill, as I mentioned, he finished with 3 tackles, 3 sacks. He had 2 tackles for a loss, 3 quarterback hits. I mean, that was just a tremendous game for him. Mario Edwards is another young player. This is a guy who they picked up after the training camp cuts. He was at the bottom of the roster. He's been earning more snaps. Finished with 3 tackles. He had a tackle for a loss. I know he also had a penalty, but he's been very active and slowly been earning extra snaps. R.J. McIntosh recorded a couple of tackles. He had a quarterback hit. Ty Davis, who started off for B.J. Goodson, I believe he was the inside linebacker. 2 tackles, 1 assist, 1 solo. Sean Chandler, he had the 1. Fumble recovery, 1 tackle. Josh Morrow continues to contribute, 1 tackle. So just, the Giants are starting to get some young playmakers step up and contribute to the cause.
You forgot one, Patty.
Who?
Grant Haley.
Grant Haley. How could I forget him? Where is he on this
list? 98 tackles, played 91% of the defensive snaps yesterday. Really nice game, for Haley. But, you're absolutely right. The Giants, one of the things about where the Giants have been this season is you do, over time, begin to turn to some of the younger players. We are finding, guys like B.J. Hill. He's a tremendous young player. To be honest with you, you pick a guy who was a college nose tackle in the 3rd round, and I thought, he'll be the backup nose tackle. He'll take a few snaps away from Damon Harrison, just to give the guy a rest. And he's turned out to be a much, much better player, I think, than any of us realized, probably other than the Giants and their scouting department. So give them credit for finding, B.J. Hill. R.J. McIntosh, it's been a rough go for him. But it was nice to see him actually make a couple of plays yesterday. That's a step forward. You see guys like B.J. Hill and R.J. McIntosh play and show a little promise, and we know the Giants have Dalvin Tomlinson, who's only a second-year player. And as much as it upset people that the Giants traded Damon Harrison, you begin to see why. Because they have young guys, they want to get more snaps. They're building and looking toward a future, and these guys, are that future.
Yeah, and just to go back to Grant Haley, just his stats: 8 tackles. He finished 3rd on the team. He had 2 tackles for a loss. It's interesting because that was a position, if you remember, coming into the season. Cornerback was a position where a lot of people were concerned with the depth. They had, at the time, Janoris Jenkins, they had Eli Apple, and people were like, okay, they've got a bunch of, journeymen here. B.W. Webb, who, by the way, has played pretty well with the increased responsibility. They had, they brought up Grant Haley, who was a rookie, a highly touted rookie who wasn't even on the roster, to start the season. And all of a sudden, these young players are stepping up and producing. And that's got to make you feel really, really good about the defense next year, which, as you and I have spoken about before, we both believe that when you look at this Giants team, most of the work that has to be done this offseason is on that defensive side of the ball. And, the fact that they're able to see what they have in some of these young kids and get them ready for next year just puts them ahead of the ball game.
Yes, it does, Patty. I'm overall, offense, defense, overall, I think that for me anyway, the big thing that we're seeing, as you said, we're seeing some of these young kids, get an opportunity and to the Giants, to me, are simply making some progress. They've beaten, what you would consider to be, weak teams, obviously, in the 49ers and in the Buccaneers. And they beat a Chicago team, with a sort of bumbling backup quarterback yesterday. But they won those games, and that's progress. So, you know, it to me, you win some games, you develop some confidence, you start to develop some players who can be part of your future, and you get them used to winning, and that's a good thing.
It sure is. It sure is. Ed, we're going to take our final break. Come back. We'll talk a little bit about special teams. We'll talk a little bit about some leftovers from the game, and then we will call it a show. So, Giant fans, stay with us.
Hey, Giant fans. Watching football is fun, but it's even more entertaining when you have some action on the games. Guys, you've heard me talking about this for weeks, and some of you are still on the sidelines. So whether you're an expert or a rookie, you should be betting at MyBookie. If you like to bet a little and win a lot, MyBookie gives you that chance. For example, pick three teams to win, and if you hit all three, you can turn $100 into $600. There's so much to bet on. College basketball, college football, NBA, NHL, and even esports. MyBookie is the one bet I know you'll be happy with all year. MyBookie has been in business for years. They've got great online reviews, and their mobile site is easy to use. Sign up this week, and MyBookie will give you a 50% deposit bonus to jumpstart your bankroll. Also, make sure you're following BetMyBookie on Twitter. They personally respond to every mention and DM, not to mention they've given away more than $10,000 in free money to their followers during this football season. Log on to MyBookie right now and use the promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% deposit bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back, Giants fans, to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Ed Valentine, Big Blue View and Big Blue View Radio. Ed Valentine, my former co-host, a guy who I miss, you know, these daily chats, Ed. I tell you, this is always a treat for me.
I know, Patty. It's just, it's kind of bizarre. We used to do this, you know, four times a week together, and now it's a special occasion.
I know, but you know what? It just makes it all the more special. And what better way to do it than to talk about a win? I think this is twice now we've done this when they've won, right?
I think so, Patty. I think, you know, this is all right. I like talking about victories.
Yeah, and you know what? Just a little, you know, behind-the-scenes thing, guys. I actually booked the Monday guests before the game, so maybe I should just make plans to book Ed the rest of the season.
Oh, you calling me a good luck charm, Patty?
Hey, I'll take whatever I can get, right?
There you go.
All right, Ed, let's break down a few remaining things from yesterday's victory. Aldrick Rosas, man, I tell you, this kid, I go back to the start of the season, actually the off season. I cannot remember people saying to me, they got to get rid of this bum. He's no good. You know, they got to get a new kicker, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we saw, I think last year in Rosas' first year, what a strong leg he had. And I know I've alluded to this numerous times, both on the show, both in on the show and in my writing. Rosas' problem last year, I think, was twofold. Number one, part of it was his kicking motion, which I know Thomas McGahee, the special teams coordinator, worked with him to fix. And also another part of it was his confidence, in that when Rosas had something go wrong, I think he beat himself up over it. And having spoken with Rosas, you know, I spoke with him after the game yesterday. I've spoken with him, you know, for articles in the past. He's a different man now. You know, not only is he more comfortable in his new kicking motion, which reduces a lot of the excess motion that he had. It's a little bit more of a compact motion. But Rosas is also more confident and more forgiving of things if they don't go exactly to plan.
No, it's interesting that you mention his kicking motion, Patty, because even yesterday on the 57-yard field goal, I'm watching him kick and I'm thinking, that just looks effortless. It looks short. It didn't look like he was straining to kick that ball at all. He just hit it and it flew.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, I asked him about it. That 57-yarder, by the way, broke a franchise record long, a 56-yard accomplished twice by Ali Haji Sheik in 1983. And I asked him about it after the game. I said to him, Aldrick, I said, when you go out there, I said, do you even think about the distance, or do you just say, okay, it's you versus me, goalposts, and I'm going to win this battle? And he shook his head, he laughed, and he said to me, and again, I'm going to paraphrase here, but he said to me, if I start thinking about distance, he says, I'm going to be out of a job. He said, it's me versus those goalposts. He says, I see them as you know, as a gate. He said, the ball is something I have to get through that gate. And he said, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do everything I can to make it, whether it's, you know, a 10-yard field goal, whether it's a 57-yarder. He said, whatever the coaches ask me to do, I'm not going to worry about the distance. I'm just going to worry about my technique. I'm going to worry about making it and let everything else fall into place. And you know, that's really a good attitude to take, because some kickers, I don't want to say are egotistical, but they're like, you know, they kind of puff out their chest after they make a 57-yarder. And Rosas, when he was, you know, when it was brought to his attention that he has the new franchise record, he goes, oh, I didn't know that. And then when somebody else came along and said something to him, he goes, yeah, I just heard that. So it's a credit to him, because look, it's a tough job. I don't think a lot of people really understand how tough kicking field goals is. I mean, the pressure situations, and you have to have ice water going through your veins in order to do that job.
Yes, you do, Patty. And I just have one thing to add, you know, for the folks listening to the show. Whether you use Twitter, whether you use, you know, whether you go on NFL.com, go vote for Aldrick Rosas for the Pro Bowl.
Amen. Amen. He's been a bright spot. He's only missed one field goal, I think, this year, which is, you know, what a reversal. He's gone from being literally worst to first, or near first, if I'm not mistaken. And just a tremendous, tremendous effort by this young man. And Ed, there was another guy on special teams I think we need to talk about. He doesn't get a lot of mention, but he was involved in a very interesting play that actually worked to the Giants' favor yesterday. And that was Antonio Hamilton, who is a backup cornerback. And that was on a punt by Riley Dixon that was downed at the two, but I believe there was a game of tip ball to keep that punt from rolling into the end zone and giving the Bears a touchback.
Yeah, Patty, that was a really good play by both Russell Shepard, who I think got to the ball first, you know, and barely was able to keep his feet, you know, off the goal line, you know, and then by Antonio Hamilton to follow him up, you know, and make that play and down the ball, which, if folks remember, led to a Chicago turnover that got the Giants, you know, three much needed points there, you know, late in the game. So, you know, a really, really good play. And, you know, aside from the mess up on the onside kick, you know, by the Bears at the end of the game, in all honesty, the Giants special teams, not just yesterday, but overall, let's give that group some credit. They've been very good.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was just going to say the special teams got off to a rocky start earlier in the season, but you know what? They have really battened down the hatches and have been playing lights out.
Yeah, even, you know, Jawil Davis got an opportunity to return punts yesterday, had a couple of nice punt returns. It's just been refreshing. When's the last time, Patty, that we've been able to watch the Giants, you know, watch them punt or kick off or watch any part of special teams and just hope, my God, I hope something bad doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been definitely been a while. And, you know, Ed, you mentioned that onside kick, and I haven't looked at the film yet as we record this, but I know Odell Beckham Jr. took a little bit of heat for his effort on that onside kick. It looked like, you know, initially it looked like that he just wasn't ready to dive in there and make a play on the ball. But I also, you know, in looking at it on Twitter, and, you know, I've got to zoom in, obviously, and break it down frame by frame, which is what I usually do when I watch film. But it looked like that play just wasn't blocked well. I think Curtis Riley was in there and missed the block, and there was another block missed that, you know, you make those two blocks and maybe those Bear defenders or those Bear players don't get to that ball, and maybe Odell has a chance at it.
Well, Patty, I'm gonna give myself a little bit of props here on this onside kick, because when the timeout was called, right before the onside kick, you know, the teams came out, they lined up, then I think it was the Giants that called a timeout. I tweeted right then, because as I looked at the Giants lineup, I tweeted, warning, Curtis Riley is on the Giants hands team. And lo and behold, the Bears looked at the Giants alignment and did exactly what they should have done. They kicked the ball right at Curtis Riley. Mm-hmm. Now, it was not Riley's responsibility to catch that kick. The way that it was set up, it was Odell Beckham's responsibility to catch that kick. But it was Curtis Riley's responsibility to throw a block. And he completely whiffed, which meant that the Bears got to the ball before Odell got to the ball. And we can argue, and I was among those initially who thought that Beckham didn't make a good enough effort to go in there and get that ball. But the more you look at it, the more I wonder if by the time he got there, because the block wasn't thrown, that it was too late anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to break that one down for The Athletic when I do my film review. But I thought the same thing. And, you know, Curtis Riley, earlier in the game, you know, we didn't mention this when we talked about defense, but he had probably the easiest interception you could have made. And the ball just went right through his hands. And just, you know, when you look at who had good games and who didn't, that play and the onside kick, you know, not blocking on that one, you know, just two strikes against Curtis Riley.
And, you know, Patty, I almost hate to mention it because Giants fans have, you know, been questioning all year. I know you hear it. I hear it. We heard it when we were together on this show on a regular basis. Why did the Giants keep Curtis Riley and get rid of Andrew Adams and Darian Thompson? And while Curtis Riley was making a mess of just about everything yesterday, it didn't help that Andrew Adams had three interceptions for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
No, it didn't. And you know, I get that question a lot. And, you know, there was, I can only speculate why the move was made. And just in looking at Andrew Adams's play for the Giants last year, he was more of a box safety. I think there were some questions about his coverage skills. But with that said, you know, you also look at other Giant, ex-Giants who have gone on and had good, you know, seasons this year. JPP, you look at Devon Kennard and Romeo Okwara over in Detroit. And you have to ask yourself, okay, how much of that was a matter of coaching? How much of that was a matter of how they were used in the you know, the defensive and special team schemes? You know, it's a fine line to walk, but, you know, I just wonder about some of that stuff. If maybe, you know, I mean, the numbers would obviously say that the Giants gave up on these guys too soon, but you have to take that into consideration, I think, and say, okay, were they just maybe not fits for what the team was trying to do? And, you know, could the coaching staff have done a better job to make them fit into, you know, what they were trying to do? So it's just an interesting, you know, exercise if you ever want to sit and think about it and break it down.
It is, Patty, and I've written about it a few times. And each of those moves, as you think about it, and I don't think we should spend a whole lot of time on it, but I understand why they did what they did. You know, it's just in some of those cases, you know, they just haven't worked out. They haven't, you know, in the case of the free safety spot, I understood what they did. They just still haven't found the right player.
And they will eventually, obviously. Ed, one more topic I want to mention before we call it a show. And that was the comment Pat Shurmur made yesterday about the culture. Now, this is a Giant team, as we all know. They were coming off a very deflating loss to the Philadelphia Eagles the week prior. A loss that, for all intents and purposes, you know, put a significant dent in their playoff hopes, which were slim to begin with. Now, the Giants, before the Bears game and even after the Bears game, they're still mathematically alive. But, you know, you coming into this game, I think a question a lot of us might have had, I know I had this question, is how would the Giants respond after that deflating loss in Philadelphia, a game that basically they had in the bag and they let slip through their fingers? And my concern was that they were just going to come out flat. They weren't going to, you know, they were just going to mail it in. And to their credit, and to Pat Shurmur's credit for keeping those guys focused and keeping the message, you know, keep beating the message across, they came out and they did what they had to. I mean, it was closer than I think a lot of us would have liked, but they held in there.
Yes, they did, Patty. And this harkens back. I had the same concern that you did heading into yesterday's game, that, oh, the season's over, you know, we're going to kind of walk through the rest of the way. So I had concerns about what kind of effort we were going to see. And right off the bat with the Ogletree interception, they got, you know, they got a big play, they got some life. So, you know, we saw really good, solid effort throughout the game. And this, to me, goes back to something that I said way back when the Giants were 1-7. And, you know, 4 weeks later, you know, that does seem like a long time ago when they were 1-7. There was all that talk about, you know, tanking for the number one pick and, oh, you know, fans hoping they would just go ahead and go 1-15 and all of that. The fact of the matter is, as Pat Shurmur said, they are trying to flip the culture. They are trying to get away from a culture where the Giants have had, what, 5 losing seasons in the last 6 years. They're coming off a 3-13 season where the locker room was fractured. You have a lot of young players that we've already talked about who will be part of this team's future, or who should be part of this team's future. And one of the things you want them to learn is you want them to learn the right habits. You want them to learn winning habits. You want them to learn what it feels like to make the plays that win games instead of simply, you know, accepting losing, or, you know, getting the feeling that no matter what they do, it's not going to turn out right. So these victories, 3 in the last 4 games, you know, some people are upset about the draft order and having fallen, I think it's to 7th now in the draft order. These victories are important for these young players going forward, for these guys who are going to be part of the future. They're important for Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman too, who are trying to establish still that they are the right people, you know, to lead this franchise back out of the mess that it's been in for the last few years.
Well said. I mean, people have to remember that it took years for the foundation of this franchise to get destroyed. It's going to take multiple years for it to be rebuilt. And I think, you know, say what you want about Shurmur and Gettleman, but they have the right idea as far as, you know, what they've been preaching, what their expectations are, and how they've gone about it. You know, could the record be a lot better? Yes, but, you know, I think realistically speaking, in retrospect, to have expected this team to contend for a Super Bowl title, while not totally impossible, it's been done, I think it was a big, big, big leap of faith that people had to take. And, you know, given how badly damaged this team was, it just unfortunately wasn't going to happen.
Patty, you know, I know we're nearing the end of our show here, and I just have to say, we got through this entire show without talking about the best quarterback on the roster. We got through this entire show without talking about the pass Odell Beckham threw.
I know. And we should have given him props too.
Yeah, pretty incredible stuff from Odell. You know, I start to wonder sometimes, you know, when you watch the things he can do, I start to wonder if there's anything he can't do.
Yeah, seriously. So, you know what, Ed? There was so much to talk about on a Victory Monday. I mean, we could probably spend 2 hours breaking it all down, but we will call it a show because I know you've got work to do, and I want to get this podcast up there and out there and get to film study and some other stuff. Giant fans, don't forget tomorrow, Twitter Tuesday, get those questions in as quickly as you can. I'm going to record the show probably around 8 or 9 o'clock on Monday night. So make sure you get your questions in. Ask P-Train. Send those to at Patricia underscore Traina, T-R-A-I-N-A. Email them to me at LockedOnGiantsPodcast@gmail.com. Also coming up this week, we're going to have John Ledyard's going to be on the show. We're going to have the crossover show with Washington's Locked On Redskins co-host. I think it's Chris Russell is the name of the gentleman. So a lot of stuff coming up. And then on Friday, we're going to probably do perspectives again like we did last week because a lot of you seem to like that format. Got a lot of positive feedback. So Giant fans, thank you as always as listening. Ed, tell everybody where they can find you these days. And Eddie, thank you for coming on with me.
Oh, always, Patty. Always a pleasure. It's at Big Blue View on Twitter. It's bigblueview.com. You know, for anything and everything about the Giants, you know, if you're not part of the community, drop on by, sign up to join the conversation.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon, Giant fans. Patricia Traina signing off.